This is Castle Playhouse. From the stages and studios, producers and playwrights of the world, your hosts, the brewers of Castle Lager, bring you the week's finest radio entertainment, Castle Playhouse.
Puts a lift in living. Castle Lager puts a lift in life. Call for Castle.
It does more than refresh. A glass of Castle gives life a lift. See that golden glint of sparkling goodness, that rich, creamy head. Taste the magnificent flavor. For a lift without a letdown, lift a Castle.
What tastes better with Castle?
Food tastes better with Castle.
A glass of Castle puts a lift in living. Castle Lager puts a lift in life. Call for Castle.
Home from work and you're weary.
Have a Castle now, it's so cheery.
Puts a lift in living. Castle Lager puts a lift in life. Call for Castle.
It does more than refresh.
A rolling stone, I would tread any road. I'd walk alone, never sharing my load. Since I came to this land of smiles, all my roving is past. And now the miles are all behind me at last. It's here I want to stay, find someone to marry. Here I tarry for the rest of my days. I'm no longer a rolling stone, now that craving has gone. This land's my own, and my home from now on. It's here I want to stay, never travel again. I'll remain for the rest of my days.
He's no longer a rolling stone, that's no longer his will. This man's his own.
My name's Jerry Bates, and that was my partner, Jim, you just heard singing. Jim Madison. Great guy, you'll like him. He's really only got one fault. He's too honest. Perhaps you don't think that is a fault. But look at it this way. Here we are, two Yanks in Kimberley. The year is 1910. We have no money, no prospects, just Old Faithful. Our car, loaded with a lot of bottles of molasses and colored water. Dr. Nature's cure-all. Jim sells the bottles while I pick the pockets. Oh, yeah, I didn't mention that, did I? That's my particular talent. I can do just about anything from picking a pocket to dealing four aces at poker. And that's really how all the trouble started. When we arrived here in Kimberley, we didn't have a bean. We had about two drops of petrol and Old Faithful. Even the sales of Dr. Nature's Cure-All were falling off. Something had to be done. Something had to be done fast. So we fixed a poker game. In less time than it takes to tell, we'd won ourselves with a little manipulation, a diamond claim. A genuine diamond claim. Matter of fact, we won it from a rather nice old guy. Still, beggars can't be choosers. However, as a result of the game, which ended in a brawl, we had to skip town afterwards. We chugged out of Kimberley in no particular direction. 200 or 300 pounds and one diamond claim, the richer. When we'd put enough miles between ourselves and the Diamond City, we stopped the car to have a snooze and to let Old Faithful cool down. It seemed like days later when I was awoken by Jim shaking me vigorously.
Ain't that the fellow we played poker with last night?
You mean the old geezer we cleaned out?
Yeah. Say, where you headed for, friend?
I beg your pardon. Oh, it's you, gentlemen. I'm on my way to Mac-Mac.
Who's he?
Mac-Mac? Oh, that's the town where my... where your claim is.
Well, how far is this place, Mac-Mac? Mac?
Oh, it's about another 40 miles, I should say.
It's a long walk.
Well, after last night, I'm afraid that's all I can afford.
Well, we seem to be heading your direction. Hop in.
Oh, thank you very much.
My name is Jim Madison.
How do you do?
And this is my friend, Jerry Bates.
How do you do? I'm Albert Patterson. Of course, everybody calls me Bert.
Hiya, Pop.
You visit Kimberley often?
No, not more than 2 or 3 times a year. Of course, I only went down this time to try and raise some money for the claim.
Pogo was the wrong way to try that.
Yes, well, I simply don't know what Julie's going to say when she hears about this. You see, the claim was all we had. And if she hears I've been gambling again, well,
Julie, is she your wife?
No, she's my daughter.
Your daughter, huh?
Yes. Do you know she even took a job singing at the Mac-Mac Hotel, just to keep us going?
Well, you are in a tough spot. Tell you what, you just hang on to the papers.
Hey, what are you doing?
Thank you very much, but I wouldn't dream of doing such a thing. It was a debt of honor, and you won it fairly and squarely.
Sure, we won it fair and square. This diamond claim might be worth a gold mine to us.
All right, tell you what, Bert, any time you can raise the 240 pounds, the papers are yours.
That's very generous of you.
But you can't have your watch back. I've got too many of them anyway.
Oh, thank you very much. I'd appreciate it greatly borrowing this for a while.
Well, Jerry, let's get on over and take a look at that diamond claim, huh?
Mac-Mac, here we come, come.
What brought you to Africa?
Getting kind of crowded back home. A man couldn't make an honest living any longer.
Making a living's difficult anywhere.
Cheer up, Pop. Your luck will break.
Oh, I just wasn't born to be lucky.
Just born to be lucky, as a gambling man must be. Born to be lucky with a million, that's for me. Born to be lucky in a country wide free. They just call me Lucky Jim from Tennessee. Born to be lucky, lucky, happy and free. Just born to be a lucky gambling man from Tennessee. Born to be lucky, lucky, happy and free. Just born to be a lucky gambling man from Tennessee. Just born to be lucky in diamonds or in love. Just born to be lucky neath a lucky star above. Just born to be lucky for the girl who fancies me. Cause she knows I'm Lucky Jim from Tennessee.
Born to be lucky. I used to do a bit of music all in England, you know.
Well, you're doing fine, Bert. You just keep it up.
Just born to be lucky, lucky, happy and free. Just born to be a lucky gambling man from Tennessee.
And so we chugged on for 40 miles into Mac-Mac. By the time we arrived, old Bert, Jim, and me were quite buddies. The claim, our claim, was some way from the other diggings. To my eye, it did not look so hot. But Bert's daughter, Julie, did. Oh, boy, what an eyeful. In fact, an eye and a half. She had a sort of a boyfriend in tow, one of the diggers named Danny. But somehow it didn't seem to figure. At least not to me, it didn't. I don't think I'll ever forget that first meeting. We just arrived at the claim, our claim, when we saw her. She came towards the car, smiling.
Hello, Dad.
Hello, my dear. My daughter, Julie.
Well, so you're Julie?
Yes.
Oh, hi, I'm Jerry.
Hello.
Oh, and this here's Jim Madison and Mr. Patterson. Of course, he's your father.
Hello, Julie. Your dad's told us a lot about you.
Yes, Dad. You got back quickly. Everything go all right?
Well, there is something I have to tell you. You see,
Jimmy,
I...
Dad?
Oh, well, what he's trying to say is that we're partners now, 50-50, right down the middle, huh?
That's right. We have the money. You people have the experience. So natural.
Well, that's wonderful. Just in time, too. We were beginning to run out of supplies.
Don't you worry about that, Julie. That's our concern from now on.
Yeah.
Danny, Neil, lunch is ready.
Well, I'll show you around the place after lunch.
Well, I can see right now. I'm going to like it just fine here.
Good.
I'm sure you will.
And what a lunch. It was as good to eat as Julie was to look at. The food was great. But Danny and I took to each other like poison. The main topic of conversation was the new increase in the price of water imposed by Ben Foster, the local pain in the neck. He not only had the all-important monopoly, he also owned the Mac Mac Hotel and the bottle store. The digger leader, Fred, a real man mountain, had convened a meeting for that same evening as a showdown with his Foster character. We all went along, too. Why not? I hate to miss a good fight. The meeting took place in the bar of the Mac Mac Hotel itself, where we'd already booked in. It was quite a turnout, but things didn't really boil up until after the floor show. The floor show started out as corny as all get out. And then Julie appeared. Wow!
Gypsy, my life is to roam. My heart has no harbor, and my love has no home. Light, so light is my burden. The cost is not high. Green fields are my carpet, and my roof is the sky.
Diggers. They were beginning to get restive.
Now, you all know why we're here tonight. To settle this matter of the price of water. 3 shillings for 40 gallons, according to Mr. Ben Foster. Well, he's making it impossible for us to carry on, even to earn a living. And we're not going to stand for that, are we? I say the time has come to do something about it. To force him to bring down the price of water by at least half. Now, Foster, you've heard what we had to say about this. For the last time, we're asking you, bring down the price of water.
3 shillings for 40 gallons isn't unreasonable.
And we say that half that price is plenty.
I have my expenses. Do you expect me to run my business at a loss?
No, nor do we expect you to skin us alive.
You're profiteering, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
No one tells me how to run my business. Either take it at the price or stay without water.
Listen, everybody, quieten down, quieten down. Well, we knew what he'd have to say. Now, you listen to me, Foster. We can't do without water, that's true. But we can do without your hotel and the liquor store. So what I say is this, friends. Unless Ben Foster agrees to reduce the price of water immediately, we boycott his hotel and the liquor store until he does.
Go ahead. We'll see who holds out the longest.
There's your answer, friends. Now, are we all together in this boycott?
Yes.
Right, come on, everybody. Let's get out of here.
And they all streamed out into the night. En route, there was quite a brawl between Danny, Julie's boyfriend, remember? And I really didn't mind what happened to him, and Punchy, Ben Foster's bodyguard and right-hand man. It ended with Max, the local moneylender, come diamond buyer, come broker, come fight promoter, stepping in with a bright idea.
This is no way to have a fight, like a couple of wild animals. I tell you what we'll do. We'll arrange a proper boxing match between Danny and Punchy for next Saturday night with a ring and a referee and everything.
So it was fixed. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday went by very quickly. With Julie, time just doesn't stand still. But all that time, looking after our mutual interests, Jim's and mine, that is, I did my best to raise a dishonest penny. What was Jim doing? He was busy endearing himself to all and sundry. He was a smash hit with the village schoolteacher and her class. And boy, that schoolteacher was no mean looker herself.
When I was only very young, I used to tell such tales. I'd never like to wash my face, I'd even bite my nails. I'd never want to go to bed. Now, kids, will you please note? Let me tell you what became of me. I grew up to be a goat. When I was still a little boy, I thought I knew it all. I never listened to my folks, now pride must take a fall. I really thought I was so smart, as crafty as a fox. Let me tell you what became of me. I grew up to be... Now if you would escape my fate and never be a mule, if you don't want to be like me, an ox, a goat, a fool, remember what I've told to you and heed all my advice. Let me tell you what'll become of you. You'll grow up to be quite nice.
Thank you, Mr. Madison. That was a lovely singing lesson. Maybe you'll sing again tonight for us at the Ticky Drive.
Ticky Drive? Where's that?
Children, Ticky Drive's our version of a bon dance.
Do you have them here, too?
Yes, all the time, but especially during boycotts.
Yeah, that might be fun. See you tonight at the Ticky Drive, kids, okay?
Okay, yes, Mr. Madison!
Hind piece, hoogly boomchick polka. Oh, my good and nice CP. Oh, nice, stay pretty boomchick polka. This big polka, I don't give the lead. Boomchick, a boomchick, a kicky, dry. Boomchick, a boomchick, lock and slide. Boomchick, a boom, baby, walk all day. Diddy, chick, a boom, that night. Diddy, chick, a boom, that night. Diddy, chick, a boom.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, claim, work went steadily on. Steadily and financially on. Oh, brother, what it costs to make money. In the way of diamonds, that is.
Oh, Jerry, by the way, I forgot to mention this to you yesterday. We need some money for the machinery on the claim. Still owe some money on it.
Oh, sure. How much do you need?
£45. And I'm afraid we have to pay it by tomorrow morning. They're threatening to take it away.
Oh, I'll let you have it. I don't carry that much on me right now.
Thank you.
And so it went on. 40 pounds here, 50 pounds there, 100 pounds somewhere else. The drain was so much, Jim and I decided to have another poker game. This time with Ben Foster himself. We were smart, but Ben Foster was smarter, even at shuffling. And if he was smarter than me, boy, that was really saying something.
I'm out. I'll play.
Right.
Cards. Two cards, please.
Two here.
None for me.
Peter takes one.
I'm out.
Double.
Redouble.
I'll raise that. How much is that?
20 pounds.
Double.
Redouble.
Oh, boy, 80 pounds. That's too much for me. How much you got there, Jerry?
10 pounds.
What's wrong, Mr. Madison? Can't you match my stake?
It's not enough. How about those watches? I'm 15 shy. Would you accept these watches?
Right, and you've seen me?
No, I redouble.
Then put in your stake.
I thought you might trust me for that.
No, sir, I never play poker on the account.
How about the automobile? Will you accept that as collateral?
160 pounds, yes, accepted.
Right.
And I've redoubled.
I'll see that.
What are you boys going to do for transport from now on? Four kings.
Four aces.
Hold it. You don't seem to have seen my hand, Mr. Madison.
I saw your hand. You have four kings, and I have four aces.
Rube, tell the gentleman what happens here on Thursday night.
Thursday night? Oh, yeah. Thursday night, kings are wild.
What do you mean, kings are wild?
And even if they are wild, they don't beat aces.
When kings are wild, they beat anything.
You could have told us they were wild before we started.
I thought you knew the rules in this town.
When you're in Rome, you do like the Mac Max, do.
Well, just about wipes us out.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but that's the way it goes. However, whenever you have 160 pounds in cash, you can have your car back, all right?
Thanks. For nothing.
So sleep well, gentlemen. Thank you.
Kings are wild. How about that?
You know what, Jim? That guy is nothing but a dirty crook.
Kings are wild. What do you know about that?
We certainly got taken for a couple of suckers last night.
Suckers or not, we better do something. We're flat broke.
Well, we're more than that. We still owe money on Bert's machinery.
Have to start brewing another batch of Dr. Nature's cure-all, I guess.
Oh, no, not that again.
What do you suggest we do to raise some money?
Well, I've seen a nice couple of wallets around. Fat, I could just...
No more pickpocketing.
Okay, then. We'll start. Hey, I got a great idea.
Whatever it is, forget it. Every time you get an idea, we lose half our baggage getting out of town.
No, but this is a great idea, Jim. You know, this boycott of the hotel's got Ben Foster really worried. Well, if we can convince him that we can break the boycott, it should be worth something to us.
What do you suggest we do? Hit a few guys on the head and drag them in?
Well, it's just about it. I know just what to use for a club. You leave this to me. If Ben Foster doesn't fall for this, then I'm a gorilla.
Keep shaving, boy. You got a long way to go.
Well, how are you gentlemen feeling this bright and sunny morning? Why are you all looking so miserable?
Nothing.
I know what it is. It's the boycott. You must be losing a fortune in sales there, Ben.
They'll be back soon enough.
Oh, sure they will, but why wait that long when there's a very simple plan to get them streaming right back in here anytime you want?
What simple plan?
Well, I've been thinking about it, and what I think is you want to brighten the place up a little bit. You know, girls, music, dancing, entertainment's what they want, Ben.
I give them entertainment.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, you want to think big. You know, something real flashy. Now, I think Jim and I are the kind of people that could lay that on for you. The way it happens is this. You lend us our car, we go into Kimberley, pick up the girls and the musicians, come back here. Tomorrow night, we've got the show on, and presto, the boycott is bust.
What makes you think it'll work?
Ben, have you ever known a pretty ankle not to work?
Yeah, but this sounds like it's going to cost me money.
No, not as much as you think. The show won't cost you much. And you can have Jim and I services for only 100.
100 pounds? Don't be ridiculous.
But that's only part of the money you won off us last night, Ben.
Do you think you could get Julie back?
Well, that's not going to be easy.
Get Julie back, you can have your 100.
Well, I have got some influence there. Now, I think that's a deal, Ben. Oh, just one thing. I'll need 50 in advance.
What for?
Well, you know, Jim and I got cleaned out last night. We need some operating expenses.
Right. But make sure the show goes on tomorrow night with Julie, or you'll have a couple of bad friends around here.
Don't you worry, Ben. The boycott's as good as bust.
But at that moment, I was thinking rather more about redeeming the machinery for the claim than breaking the Ben Foster boycott, which in any case I was in sympathy with. I got back with the money just in time.
30, 40, 45, that's right, huh?
That's it. And just in time. I'll tell you something. If I hadn't got this money, I was loading that machinery. Good day.
Hold on. Look, Jerry. I appreciate the trouble you've gone to get this money, but I'm not going to permit Julie to take part in this Break the Boycott show.
Zacharias, load that machinery.
Now look, Bert, I told you, if there's no Julie, there's no show, and then you gotta give this money back to Ben Foster and you'll lose your machinery.
It's true, I suppose. We can't possibly work without machinery.
Unload the machinery, Zacharias.
Mr. Patterson, don't forget you're on the Diggers Committee, and I don't think it'd look right for Julie to be taking part in the show.
Zacharias, load the machinery.
Then what do you suggest we do? Work without machinery?
But what'll the people think of us, Julie?
Look, Jerry and Jim have done everything they can to keep this claim going. And I don't think we should worry about people now.
Well, that settles it then, huh?
Well, it seems though we have no ruddy option, does it?
Zacharias, leave the machinery alone. Thank you. Good day.
Oh, cheer up, Pop. So we're paying a little more for water. At least we're keeping the claim going.
Yes. Come on, Danny.
So now what happens is this, Julie. Jim won't be back until tonight from Kimberley with the girls and the musicians. Then we rehearse all day to get the show lined up. Comes 8 o'clock and bang, the big send-off.
Yourself a drink. It is free. Ben Foster pays for everything. Step right up, as much as you can drink.
Well, step right in, gentlemen. Have a free drink. No obligations.
Hey, come along up here. What about you, chap down there? Step
the
right up.
And Mac, all drinks on the house.
Go on, Willie. Have yourself a free beer.
Well, I suppose if it's for free, it can't affect the boycott, huh?
Sure, if it's for nothing, it can't hurt.
Well, come on, let's go.
Yeah. Hey, you can't do that. A boycott's a boycott.
Don't have to pay, it doesn't count.
That's the stuff, Willie. Drink up.
Sure, there's no harm in having a drink.
Come along, friends. Anything you want. Beer, brandy, whiskey.
Might as well drink Foster's liquor. Let's go.
That's the stuff. Don't be shy.
Come right in. That's the stuff, boys.
The show is for free. Take a look at those girls.
Come on, let's have a little bit of more right time.
Look, if you don't pay, it doesn't count. Come on, let's have some fun.
There, I told you it would work.
What's going on around here, eh? Did you know there's a boycott on?
It's for free, so it doesn't count.
You're all playing in the forces' hands. That's what you're doing.
I am a roving gambler, gambled all around. Whenever I meet a deck of cards, I lay my money down. I've gambled down in Cape Town, played cards in Bloemfontein. But I'm going back to Kimberley to gamble my last game, to gamble my last game. I hadn't been in Kimberley many more days than three when I fell in love with a pretty little girl. She fell in love with me. She took me in her parlor, cooled me with a fan. She whispered low in her mother's ear, I love this gambling man, I love this gambling man. Tonight I'll go out on the town hoping lady luck will bring a winning hand to this gambling man. Then I'll buy a diamond ring. The gamblers took their places, the cards were dealt around. I caught him dealing from the bottom of the deck and I shot that gambler down. Here I am in prison, dragging a ball and chain. I can still hear the old judge say, you gambled your last game, gambled your last game.
Well done, Ben, well done.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you, friend.
I wasn't idle either. I took Julie out and about quite a bit, though it didn't help the feeling between Danny and me any. That was decidedly sour. Not that he had much time to do anything about it. He was too busy training for his forthcoming fight with Punchy. Jim still insisted that I lay off the wallets. The one certain way we had of making money fast, and Jim wouldn't let me. That's what I meant earlier by saying that he was too honest. I mean, how else can you make money fast? It was Jim, though, who came up with a possible, I said possible, solution. We were standing watching Punchy training. He was busy giving the punch bag a grim taste of what Danny could look forward to the next night.
Managed to raise 50 pounds from Foster. Go over and put it on Danny.
What do you mean, Danny? Look at this boy. He's in great shape.
Have you heard the odds Max has given? Punch is only even money. Danny's 5-1. This is our only chance to buy the automobile back.
Well, there goes our automobile.
Danny's no walkover. Now stop arguing and go on over to Max.
Okay, after all, it's only money.
By the time Saturday evening came, that town was really buzzing. Nobody talked of anything but the fight. Just about everybody had something on it, though not many of the bets were in favor of Danny. This made me feel all the better. At last the time arrived. Max Bloom was still taking money right up to the last moment, even as Fred, the digger leader, climbed into the ring to referee the fight. Jim, Julie, and me had ringside seats.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will be a contest, according to the Queensbury rules, over 10 rounds, for the championship of Mac Mac and a purse of £100. On my left, at £165, the challenger for the Mac Mac crown, Danny Pretorius. And on my right, at £170, the champion of Mac Mac, Punchy Alfred.
Now listen, fellas. No rabbit punches and no low punches. When I say break, break clean. Okay? Right.
On the whole, Danny didn't do too badly in that first round. But Punchy gave him a couple of hefty smacks just before the bell, and they didn't augur well for the future. For Danny, that is. In the interval, Ben Foster and Rube in Punchy's corner were clearly giving him his orders. And from Punchy's smile, it was clear that the first round had only been a warm-up for him. In the other corner, fair's fair. Danny didn't look too bad either. But his left eye was looking a bit puffy and he was panting a little. Nobody was placing bets on Danny anymore.
Seconds out, round two.
And Punchy came again. The round started more or less like the last one, and it continued that way, except that the tempo was decidedly on the up and up. By the end of the round, Punchy was miles ahead on points, and he managed to get in some pretty telling punches as the gong went. In Punchy's corner, Ben and Rube were giving him what appeared to be the final knockout strategy. Punchy still looked as if he hadn't been for more than a brisk walk. Things weren't quite the same in the other corner. Bert was frantically mopping up Danny, who was now looking decidedly the worse for wear. With his left eye rapidly closing and a cut near it no more than temporarily patched up, it was clear that the coming round could see the end of the fight. The crowd were really getting with it. Julie, too, was getting all worked up about what was going to happen to Danny. Me, I had no complaints. I felt good. Perhaps it was the thought of the money that we were going to win. And clang went the gong for the recommencement of hostilities. I hoped it would prove to be the last round. Even allowing for the fact that I was not much struck on Danny, I felt that the sooner he was stretched out asleep on the canvas, the better for everyone, especially him. But he kept going. Don't ask me how, but he did. Punchy had now decided this was going to be a three-round scrap and no more. He went tearing in after Danny with a straight left which opened up the already cut eye. Then a hook to the point of the jaw. Danny's knees buckled and he hit the deck with a thud.
Two. Three. Box on.
I think it was the sight of Julie looking anxiously at him through the ropes that got Danny to his feet. He was silly enough to stay down longer, really. Because, brother, he could have done with the rest. Pride had something to do with it, I suppose. But he was up after the count of three. Punchy went belting in again, and Danny could do a little more than back up and cover. Even that wasn't entirely successful. Punchy was still getting quite a few through the failing defense. Suddenly, Danny dropped his guard altogether, and Punchy, stepping in, caught him a real beauty on the side of the head. Danny went down as if he'd been pole-axed.
One, two, three, four. Five, six, seven, eight. Box on.
Those two words, box on, sounded pretty cruel. Because at that point, Danny was needing all his energies just to stay on his feet. Punchy stepped in to deliver the blow that would end the fight. And the bell went. If anyone was ever saved by the gong, it was Danny. Not that it would do him much good in the long run. It wasn't doing me much good either, at least not as far as Julie was concerned. You see, when it was nearly all over, I'd made the mistake of shouting encouraging things to Punchy. Naturally, I wanted him to win. Julie obviously took a pretty dim view of it. I tried to cover up.
Great round, huh, Julie?
Yes, looks like your man's winning, doesn't it?
But it didn't do me any good. The cat, at least as far as Julie was concerned, was definitely out of the bag. She got up abruptly, her pretty nose tilted an angle of 45 degrees. She pushed her way over to Danny's corner. He was scarcely able to recognize her, but the words she whispered in his ear seemed to get through. In spite of the fact that his face was not going to look the same for some weeks to come, he was not too bad on his feet. As Bert and daughter Julie pulled the stool out of the ring for the start of the fourth round. Punchy rushed out of his corner as if he had a train to catch. Danny kept him out as best he could. At this point, Punchy was so sure of himself that he wasn't really bothering about defense at all. Suddenly, quite without warning, Danny stepped aside. And as Punchy went past on the impulse of the punch that never landed, Danny landed a real purler. The sound it made was only topped by the sound Punchy made as he hit the canvas.
One, two, three. Four, five, six. Up,
and Punchy was up. By the look on his face, this was where the Marquess of Queensbury was in for a thin time. He started swinging punches at Danny, but it was obvious that he was still considerably shaken. Danny, on the other hand, seemed to have got some sort of life-giving transfusion from someone. Maybe it was Julie, throwing her adoring looks left, right, and center. Anyway, that's where Danny hit punch. Left, a right, and wham! An uppercut dead center which lifted the heavier guy almost out of the ring. Punchy's eyes rolled, and this time he hit the fingers for the door. Unbelievable. Danny had won. He didn't look so good himself. In fact, with Julie's loving arms around his battered face, he looked revolting. Jim came up to me, a big smile on his face. It didn't stay there long. I tried to put it as nicely as I could, but he nearly took off.
I told you to put the money on Danny, but no, you're much too clever for that.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't think Punchy could lose.
It cost us £250 for you to find that out. Do you realize that's $1,250?
Well, I said I'm sorry. What more do you want me to do?
Nothing. You've done enough.
Well, calm down, Jim. We've been in worse spots than this. Why don't you relax and let's take stock of the situation?
Well, to begin with, we're flat broke.
Yeah, and Ben Foster's closing the show tonight. That means we're out of a job tomorrow.
No job, no money, no car. We can't even get out of this town.
But we do have a diamond claim.
That's our biggest liability.
Now, what we gotta do is to get rid of that claim and get out of here.
That's a good idea, but for one thing, nobody wants it.
Yes, the new Bert Patterson does. You said yourself, any time he could raise the cash, he could have the claim.
Don't make me laugh. Where do you think he's gonna raise 240 pounds?
I think I know.
You stop thinking. We're in enough trouble as it is.
Well, look, it's simple. All I gotta do is this, Jim.
Don't tell me, don't tell me. I don't think I could stand another one. All I want to think about is getting out of this town.
Well, you leave it to me. This is a great idea, and nothing's gonna go wrong.
Here we go again.
Hi, Rube.
Hi, Jerry.
Pity about Punchy last night, huh?
Ah, it was a lucky punch.
What do you mean, lucky punch? Where he went wrong was in the infighting. He didn't get in there close where he could do the damage.
But he was in close. We told him to.
Well, he didn't do it right. Now, let me show you. Put them diamonds away. You see, Punchy didn't seem to have the reach to... Hold this. I'll show you. He didn't get in like this with a kidney. All right, he was leaning on him, but he wasn't getting in close. And then when the boy least expected it, he stepped back and wham! The fight's over.
You think so?
Sure.
I'm still punching that for the return fight.
Thanks, Jerry boy.
Getting Rube's three diamonds was almost too easy. I just let my fingers wander while I was demonstrating what Punchy should have done, and hey presto, they were in my pocket. 10 minutes later, I was down at the claim. To do what? You're right. To drop the three diamonds, lately the property of Rube, into the gravel pan that Bert was supervising. Part one of the operation completed, I went back to the hotel to put Jim into the picture. I had a nasty feeling that with his troublesome conscience, he might well say something that might spill the bean.
So then, Jim, what happens is this. Bert comes rushing up here shouting about the diamonds he's just discovered, and we say, well, isn't that wonderful? But we won't go back on our word, Bert. You just hand over the 240. Bert goes over to Max Bloom. He raises a loan on the strength of the diamonds he's just discovered, and we hand over the papers.
Where do you find time for all these dirty tricks?
Well, there's nothing else to do. Anyway, he owes us the 240.
You could have just sold the diamonds you fingered off Rube.
They weren't worth more than 50 or 60 pounds.
Jim! Jerry! They've started up! They're coming in at last!
Here he comes. Here a minute, Jim. Now let me down. You'll be convincing, huh?
They've started to arrive. Right after you left, Jerry boy. There they were. Three of them. Three beauties. Of course, they're not very big, but they're real beauties.
And that's real great for you, Pop.
And once they start arriving, they'll just come rolling in.
We're real happy for you, Bert.
But I'm happy for all of us. We're partners, remember? 50-50. Right down the middle, huh?
Well, we were until this morning, Pop, but as I told you, Jim here and I, we're pulling out, so if you'll just pay us out, we'll be moving on.
But we could be rich. All of us, we could be rich.
Yeah, well, that's your good luck, Pop. Now, if you'll just pay us the 240, we'll be pulling out.
Well, of course, I don't have that amount on me at the moment.
No, I'm sure the diamonds aren't worth that much, but maybe we could raise a loan on the strength of them. How about going to see Max Bloom?
Well, we could try.
Yeah, Max Bloom's place. Come on, Pop, let me take you over there.
And over we trooped to Max's little wooden shack. Max was enthusiastic. Jim peeled off back to the hotel. I waited with Bert till the money was handed over. From Max to Bert, and then from Bert to yours truly. I hurried back to the hotel and handed it over to Jim.
pay agent. They all told you it worked. 240 beautiful smackers. What's the matter with you? You trying to reform all of a sudden or something? You said yourself any time you could get the 240, you could have the papers.
That was a dirty trick. You see how excited the old man was?
Well, we only got back what we put into that hole in the ground anyway. Maybe a lot less.
You know what, Jerry? We're just a couple of heels. No good to anybody.
Well, you want us to get that car out of Hawk or not?
You'd better do that before we mess up a few more people's lives.
Jim was really depressed about everything. And what was worse, it was catching. I wandered off on my own and bumped into Danny, who, now that he had Julie eating out of his hand again, was as friendly as could be. He told me how one of the diamond diggers had accidentally discovered water. This was great news, though it left me cold at the time. You see, it meant that Ben Foster's stranglehold on the diggings was broken. That night, we had a farewell concert at the Mac Mac Hotel.
If ever your life is lonely, if ever you're feeling low, there's one thing you must remember. A stranger's just a friend you do not know. I'll pass along this way just one time only, a fleeting moment in eternity. Why should I spend my life alone and lonely, if just a word of friendship is the key? A warm smile can bring me true love. A warm heart can make it grow. There's no need for being lonely. A stranger's just a friend you do not know. No matter where you go, of this you can be sure, a stranger's just a friend you do not know.
Thank you, friends, very much. That's the end of our show. We'll be leaving tomorrow. We'd like to wish all of you goodbye, good luck, and good digging.
Early the next morning, we were ready to push off. Danny passed by as we were strapping the last of the cases to the back of Old Faithful.
Well, Danny, how are things going at the diamond claim?
Not so good. Haven't found another since those three yesterday.
Oh, that's real tough. Real tough.
They started up again, Danny. They're rolling. They started to come again. We struck it rich, Danny. We struck it rich. Look at these. 10 beauties in only 3 washes. Look at them, aren't they wonderful? And that one, the size of my thumb.
What a beauty.
Yes, it happened right after you left. We just couldn't wait to let you know. Isn't it wonderful?
Gee, that's great, Julie, but you deserve it.
Thanks, Jerry, but we could never have got this far if it hadn't been for you and Jim.
I'd think nothing of it. We're just a couple of Santas.
Are you sure you won't stay? Same deal as before, you know. 50-50 right down the middle.
But a deal's a deal, Pop.
Yeah, it's fair and square, Bert.
But there is one thing before we go. Those 3 diamonds you found yesterday, I sure would appreciate having them just for old time's sake.
Why, certainly, Jerry. Here they are.
Thank you. Just to remind us of the time we nearly struck it rich.
We better get moving, Jim.
Well, there isn't much more to tell, really. The whole town turned out to see us off. And I even had a chance of slipping Rube's 3 diamonds back to him. We said our goodbyes. I gave the starting handle a flick, and the engine caught at once.
Thanks, Danny.
So long, Bert. Bye, Julie.
Hi.
Good luck. Hope you also strike it rich someday.
Don't worry, we will.
I'm gonna strike it rich. I'll get a good news cablegram and live as carefree as the King of Siam. I'm much too lucky to get stranded. I'm gonna win out single-handed. I'm gonna strike it rich, so very rich I am.
We're gonna strike it rich. We're gonna get our lucky break.
and play a game of give and take. We're gonna strike it rich. We're gonna make a pile of money. Life's sweeter than honey. We feel so good, it's kind of funny. We've got that lucky itch.
We're gonna strike it rich.
We'll get a good news cablegram and live as carefree as the king of Siam. Today the sun is shining brighter. Today our hearts are feeling lighter. We're gonna strike it rich. Oh, yes, so very rich. We're gonna hit the road and strike it rich.
Always a rolling stone, I would tread any road. I'd walk alone, never sharing my load. Since I came to this land of spires, all my roving is past. And now the miles are all behind me at last. It's here I want to stay, find someone to marry. Here I tarry for the rest of my days. I'm no longer a rolling stone, now that craving has gone. This land's my own, and my home from now on. It's here I want to stay, never travel again. I'll remain for the rest of my days.
He's no longer a rolling stone, that's no longer his will. This land's his own, the home of King Malachi.
Castle puts a lift in living. Castle Lager puts a lift in life. Colfer Castle.
It does more than refresh. A glass of Castle gives life a lift. See that golden glint of sparkling goodness, that rich, creamy head. Taste the magnificent flavor. For a lift without a letdown, lift a Castle.
What tastes better with Castle?
Food tastes better with Castle.
A glass of Castle puts a lift in living. Castle Lager puts a lift in life. Call for Castle.
Home from work and you're weary.
Have a Castle now, it's so cheery.
Castle puts a lift in living. Castle Lager puts a lift in life. Colfer Castle.
It does more than refresh.
And be sure to tune in next Wednesday night at 8 and every Wednesday night for the week's finest radio entertainment, brought to you for your listening pleasure by your hosts, the brewers of Castle Lager. So until next week then, a very good night to you all.